better.
I like it.
Well, there are two things to be done. First of all, we put him in the hospital and withdraw all television.
I see.
And then we give him this.
Radio!
It's game time. I'm Daniel Keelman.
And I'm Kyle Amon.
And this is episode number 155, Test Patterns. Yes, good old 150 plus 5. Minus 2 plus 2. Kyle, how is everything going? How's your weekend going?
It's all right. Just kind of being lazy today. Usually Sundays I do chores, but I've been kind of neglecting that. I'll do that Monday, so... I haven't been doing much. Just kind of hanging out. I watched Still Alice over the weekend.
And how was that?
That was like two nights ago. It's really depressing, but I really, really liked it. Like I haven't seen all of the best actress nominations from last year, but I think Julianne Moore deserved it just based off of that movie alone. I mean, I haven't seen everything, but it was really, really good.
The only other ones I remember being nominated were Reese Witherspoon for Wild and Rosamund Pike
who
was in Gone Girl? I don't know. Whatever the actress was in Gone Girl, she was the other one nominated.
Yeah, Rosamund Pike, yeah.
Yeah, but from what I haven't seen Still Alice, what I heard, Julianne Moore, everyone seemed to say, like, the movie on a whole is, like, okay, but her performance is amazing. So, yeah, I've heard the movie's okay, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, describing the movie is, like, it's pretty simple. You could describe it like, you know, a linguist.
Yeah, it's about a youngish woman diagnosed with Alzheimer's and going through that.
Yeah, but I thought it hit, like, all of the beats that you would associate with that pretty well, I thought. I think that, mm-hmm. I mean, the supporting cast was kind of like, you got, like, Alec Baldwin who plays, like, her husband, he's fine. And then the kids are, they're okay. There's that who's the Twilight girl?
Kristen
Stewart.
She's
in it as like the youngest. Yeah. She wants to be an actress. And at first I was kind of annoyed with that character. It's just kind of like the typical youngest kid who wants to be the wild kid. But then I like how it ended up towards the end where they kind of bonded the most since I don't want to give too much things away, but she kind of she becomes part of her life a lot more because she was on the West Coast and then she moves over to the East Coast once the disease starts setting in. Yeah, it was really affecting. I liked the script. I thought it was pretty well done overall.
Well, I'm glad you were able to track it down and watch it and enjoy. I am not a big fan of Kristen Stewart. She's a very kind of one note actress for me. I don't get the hype. Don't think she's that great, but whatever, it's fine.
She was okay on this. Yeah, and it's hard to get past that like initial thing because she's associated with Twilight and those kind of movies. But it's kind of good that she's branching out and doing something a little more mature.
Yeah. And, well, you and I had a shared experience this week, Kyle, where even different locations, we both witnessed the one and only Mr. Swan himself, Sufjan Stevens. We both saw him, and you in San Diego and me in San Francisco, or Oakland, I should
say. Yeah, yeah. I didn't see any of the opener. Did you? The whole Lotto Negro?
Yeah, we caught a little bit. We were there for the opener. He had a very interesting setup where he was this DJ. I forget what his name was. Do you remember, Kyle? You told me. It was something weird.
Like what his name is?
Yeah.
It means black ice cream in Spanish, so helado negro. But we only saw like the very end of his set, and it looked like tinsel Christmas tree people. That's all we really saw.
He was basically manipulating a lot of boards in front of himself, and then he had two people dressed up in, as you said, tinsel from a Christmas tree, and they were dancing around slowly and experimentally to the music. It was more, I think, about an experience than the music, maybe. It was interesting, but we didn't sit and watch it. We just kind of watched it from the back of the theater while having a beer, so, yeah. But Sufjan himself... Yeah. was amazing as always. Yeah, the man always impresses. That was really He's solid. A very beautiful man, makes a very beautiful music, played the whole new album that we reviewed here in its entirety, and then threw in a lot of interesting B-sides, or not B-sides, just interesting other deeper cuts. He played a good selection from Seven Swans and All Delighted People, and then a couple from Illinois, and that was it. I was actually really impressed with how he took the new album, because it's such a when you listen to the album, it's a very more acoustic than a lot of his more recent albums. At least it sounds like it, where it's very personal and intimate and not like as colorful as a lot of his other albums have been. But live,
I was kind of dreading going to the live experience.
Yeah, live, they translate that all like with that. It's a small band for him, too. It's only like five people. But man, they did a really, really amazing job with bringing a lot of sound and making it very lush. I was very, very impressed. It made me want to go back and listen to the album again because it was just much more of a different experience. So I was really, really happy that I got to go and see him.
Yeah, it's true. It's kind of like what he did with like some of his Seven Swans acoustic stuff. Like he kind of amps it up with the full band. And then he really likes that. I can't remember the exact. There's a specific, I think it's called like an ARP synthesizer, something like that. It starts with an A. He really likes those. It's kind of like a. He just kind of wails on that synthesizer from, I think, the 70s. And he's done that a lot, like, on Age of Odds, and then adding that new stuff to these songs on Carrie.
Yeah.
Carrie and Lowell, that is. Yeah, I was impressed, yeah. At first, I was kind of like, oh, I don't really like the flow of it, because it's like, this is just the new album, like, with no old...
Yeah, and in the live setting, watching the whole album performed as a piece made a lot more sense. I mean, I think later on he could take a couple of those tracks, because there were, in my audience, the audience that I saw it with, there were a couple people that were already really into the album and were really happy when he played some of those new songs from it. So they're already entering, you know, the fans' new favorite songs, but... And I could see those, like, entering in later on in his set list, but I actually kind of like, we saw him also for Age of Odds when he was touring for that, and he did a similar thing where he played almost the new album in its entirety, and then he played some older songs. And I kind of like that because he's such a concept album kind of guy. I actually like that he's just touring in support of whatever the recent works are, and then he throws in some stuff at the end. I think that formula is pretty it fits him more than a lot of other artists that I can think of in this, because a lot of other artists, like when they have a new album, even if they're a concept album, you know, only a couple songs really work, but it seems like he, you know, definitely has a full vision for what he's doing. So it fits the performance.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially now, because his albums are like really, like maybe his old stuff could kind of sound the same and you could easily go back and forth. But now that he's trying all these different things and going from like full band to like electronic rock dancey stuff and then back to acoustic. Even if he like changes it in live settings, probably best to like keep him separated.
Ever since,
like maybe it'll change later on in his career.
Ever since he ditched the banjo, he's been having to do this format.
Yeah.
So no, very very good show.
Yeah, yeah, it was cool. I liked his little stories about his parents and how they just went from cult to cult and really taught him about death and the most crazy things imaginable. Did he tell you about like how his dad killed like his pet rabbit out in the back?
I didn't hear that story. Yeah, I stepped out for one moment. I might have missed that one, but no. Did he tell you the story about how his parents would go back and get like their past lives read?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and then they'd get the... Okay. They had a bunch of animals, and they would get the animals' lives read.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Crazy stuff. Crazy, crazy upbringing. But no, great show. Right. I don't know. I think he's at the tail end of his tour, so you probably missed him if you haven't already, but he might announce another run of it. We'll see. So, Sufjan Stevens, always a good show. Definitely catch.
Certainly.
Kyle, we should talk about this week's episode, I think. I think that would be the next best thing to do.
Sounds pretty good. Pretty good idea.
Okay. Well, let me tell you, Kyle, what we're talking about this week, because I don't think you know. I hope you've watched and listened to these things, because I don't think you're aware of what it is. First up, we're going to be discussing the slept-on film of my choosing, the 2012, I think? 2012 romantic comedy, 2 Days in New York. After that, we're going to be talking about the... it's still running on TV right now, but it is I think it's a slept-on. It's a slept-on television series, definitely. An animated show called China, Illinois. And lastly, we have the... latest and seventh album from Brit Rockers Muse with their new album Drones.
Cool.
That's gonna tie it up for this week. So, Kyle, any other thoughts about The Witcher or basketball or Sunday and being lazy before we get started with our first segment?
I'm excited about Game 2 Finals. I'll just tell you that. So we might rush through this, but we'll give it our all. I'm excited about all these subjects. I'm glad that we picked some diamonds in the rough here, just because it's kind of slow with TV in the summer. But
yeah, summer gets a little bit slow in releases in every capacity. Well, except for, like, I guess, big blockbusters, but we don't really want to talk about those. So, yeah, should be fun.
Cool.
So, great. Well, I'll make sure that we have a hard out, Kyle. You get to your game. Don't worry. You'll be fine.
I'll just leave and you can
first
talk
up,
to yourself.
Let's. Yeah, there we go. When I start doing this stuff at the end, you can just, like, walk away. First up, let's discuss the slept-on 2012 film, 2 Days in New York.
I'm going to be 38. I'm fat. I'm a pain in the ass.
But you're French.
Who's my sweet little koala bear?
Is that what I have to say to get some?
Yeah, say it. Say it.
My girlfriend's family just got in fresh from Paris. My father-in-law was detained at customs for trying to smuggle in 30 pounds of sausage.
Do I need to look anywhere else? The hell is this thing?
The 2012 film 2 Days in New York stars Julie Delpy from most notably probably English Patient fame and the Before series, Before Sunrise, Before Sunset, Before... whatever the other one was. And then it also stars Chris Rock, who is Chris Rock. And the film came out in 2012. It was the sequel to a film called 2 Days in Paris, which I have not seen. But Delpy apparently also made that film, too. You have seen it, Kyle?
I haven't seen it. But I read up a little bit about it and how this is, like, connected to it. Like, she has her one kid with the main character from that previous movie. And they kind of mention in the beginning where she's talking to her kid. With a little puppet show. But then this is her new husband.
It's really...
They both have kids from previous marriages.
Yeah, I would say it's not a film that you have to see the original one to get. I think that it stands alone its own. I'm curious now... Yeah, no, I'm actually a little bit curious to go and see that first one now. But basically, 2 Days in New York is... The simple premise is... I mean, it's exactly as it sounds. Julie Delpy plays a character named Marion, and she has her boyfriend, played by Chris Rock, and his character's name is Mingus. And they're sharing a space in New York. They've been dating for a while. They're not married yet. And they both have a kid from a previous relationship. And so they're all living together with their, you know, respective... Like, Chris Rock with his... daughter and Julia Delpy with her son. And basically what happens is Julia Delpy's there's a lot of things going on. It's basically it's very indie filmy where there's all these things happening in this short amount of time where Julia Delpy's family is visiting from France and they cause a lot of chaos while they're visiting. But then Chris Rock is also and then she's also dealing with putting on this art exhibit that she's been working on for a while, a photography exhibit. And Chris Rock is a radio host where he takes calls and does some other things. And he's been trying to work with getting up in his career, but also working with their relationship. And it's trying because of it. And this is all, it's all through a lot of different funny scenarios, interacting with the family and interacting with, them just getting around New York and things like that. The movie is very lighthearted in nature. I wouldn't say this is a great film by any means, but I think that this film, I don't think, anybody's going to talk about it. And I think after watching it, I feel that it is deserved of talking about. I think there's something about a nice whimsical romantic comedy that's really hard to do right. And this film does a lot of those things right.
Right.
I think it balances the quirky with the comedy, with the drama all fairly well. There's a couple of parts that I thought were a little maybe pretentious or just a little too much. But on the whole, I think it's a really, really effective movie that I don't think a lot of people would try otherwise. Kyle, I've talked long enough. Go ahead.
So I haven't watched the first one, and I guess a lot of people don't like this one as much as the first one because the first one had a more of a serious drama tone. Like they did have some comedic elements. It was kind of like the Before Sunset, Before Sunrise kind of movies. Whereas this is more of kind of reminds me of it's kind of like a modern version of It Happened One Night. Like not as good as that movie, I agree.
Oh yeah,
but it has those screwball qualities with especially Janot, who's Marion's father, and then her sister Rose, who's they're all very free. Then the boyfriend Manu, who comes in, there's a lot of stuff about them talking over dinner, and there's really right. awkward conversations that you could see happening, like, with family members or new people, like, just kind of throwing them all into the same room. And I like that part. When those characters were first introduced...
And there's the added level of those characters being from France, and they don't speak... A lot of them don't speak English fluently.
Yeah, there's a lot of scenes.
So there's, like, mistranslation, comedy, and things like
that. Yeah, like the whole scene with Jeannot and Mingus that go to a Thai massage place. And then there's just, like, a lot of antics. It's not as good as, like a Seinfeld kind of episode, but I did remind me of some kind of Seinfeld moments where, like, a few things kind of came back.
I could see that, yeah.
It's not quite as clever, but, like, just kind of that, like, that kind of flavor to it. Just without how it's just kind of carefree, and you get, like, a lot of real weird interactions between all these main characters. At the beginning, I really didn't like this movie. Like, I was like, what the hell is this, Daniel? Why did you pick this? Just because those characters that come in, like, I like that dynamic between between Mingus and Marion at first, just because it's like, you know, it's like very relatable. Like, you know, you're married. Right. Like, the whole thing throughout the whole movie is they're trying to have sex. And there's always something that comes up,
right.
And it's like an ongoing joke. And I like that whole setup of, like, characters. They're living together, and now they have to, like, deal with, like, new things because they both have kids. But then these characters, just the family from France come in, and they're just, like, really obnoxious. Like, that's the point. But then you slowly start to, like, a few of those characters go away, which is a good thing, and then they kind of, like, wrap it all together. And it was kind of cute at the end. Like, there were some things that were surprising. Like, I think that's the main thing that I keep coming back to. Like, it was cute and charming. Like, it's not, like, the best romantic comedy I've ever seen. But I was really surprised by the end of it.
I agree. And I definitely see your point on hating it at first, because it feels really shoehorned in with that French family. Just, oh, they're all eccentric, and they're French, and they're free-spirited. But you... end up, there's a lot of really funny things that come out of that. For instance, and I also like how there's a lot of, the writing is really good in this. It's very, maybe like Woody Allen-esque, where there's a lot of characters kind of talking over each other. And I like, for instance, that one scene, it goes on for a while, but there's a scene in there where Julie Delpy's character, she claims to this person in the elevator that she has brain cancer, and it's terminal. She's, you know, going to be passing away very soon. And then at their apartment, the lady in the elevator, her husband.
That was the kind of thing
by,
that reminded me of Seinfeld, where they're trying to get out of a situation.
It is, yeah. Right. And then the husband comes by, and he's, like, asking to look at the brain scans. And Chris Rock's character, he doesn't know that, like, that's the excuse she made up. But it's not like they're trying to juggle, like, oh, no, like, don't say anything. He, like, starts playing against her and is saying, yeah, come in. Like, let me go get the brain scans for you. Like, let's go over this. Let's talk about it. And then he comes in, and he finds her sister attractive. Like, there's all these, like, interesting things going on at once that are unconventional as far as, like, how that scene, I think, would normally play out in any traditional romantic comedy. And it was those situations that it was in that vein when I started to really enjoy this movie more. I thought it did a really clever job of taking familiar tropes from romantic comedies, but then playing with them in way, way, way different ways, where the characters were a little bit more realistic about it, but unpredictable in a good way, too. And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, I didn't like the first time that they brought about, because this is very ensemble-driven, but I ended up liking those segments where Chris Rock's character is by himself, and he's talking to this cardboard cutout of Obama. And, I mean, it's really just like Chris Rock humor, like, unadulterated. Like, it's almost like a stand-up sequence. But I like those bits as well. Like, they were kind of, like, necessary beats along the main path, because you get all these people, like, talking over each other, and it can be a little bit too much at the beginning. So it was kind of good that was kind of... It's like a way for him to, like, vent his frustrations. It's kind of a cheap way of doing it, but I thought it was okay.
And it was funny too, because I like how they also address it, because the French, the dad and the boyfriend, the French people, they're talking about Chris Rock, and they're asking, you know, oh, do you like Obama? Do you like Obama? And I thought they did a really clever job of, like, of course that's what they would ask. But then, and then Chris Rock gives a very good answer that I think a contemporary black man would give, where he says, well, yeah, I like him, but I have some criticisms too. But at heart, he's like a super big fan of Obama.
Right.
And I thought, like, yeah, that's like that seems incredibly true and really funny. And they do some really.
Well, I like how the boyfriend translates that for the dad, where he's like, yeah, he loves him, just loves him.
And
that was it was just kind of funny. But going back to it, like, there are some weird parts to it, like this the stuff that one scene with Vincent Gallo, who's like a renowned, like, or infamous, movie guy. Like, he did the Brown Money movie that everyone talked about for a little bit. That was just weird. That whole thing about, like, the Marion selling her soul at the art gallery. That was
right.
I don't know. It was just at that point, like, I wanted to see more of what was happening with Chris Rock. And at that point, like, everyone's separated and they were looking for her. And her phone had died.
Right.
It was just, I don't know. And they just bring it together at the end. But it just fell a little out of place.
I feel like character-wise, I liked where everyone landed at the end. But some of the execution of it was a bit, some of it was a little too screwball-y for my taste. Like, there's that whole thing with the bird that I was just like, nah.
But then
there's also, I agree, that scene with Vincent Gallo. I get what they're trying to do with that. And that was when it was veering too much on the indie film quirky side of things and not just, you know, clever writing. Like, it was maybe trying too hard. I don't really know. But it didn't sit right. And it wasn't offensive. It just felt a little bit uninspired. And that could have been tighter. But on the whole, I think this film largely has gotten overlooked by the public. And I can kind of see why, because it's a little bit, like, hard to explain. There's not really a lot to it, but I think it does a lot with a little. I think it's, you know, very effective. It's funny. It's simple. And I think also Chris Rock does a really good job acting in this, too. I think, you know, he's known as a stand-up comedian, and he's proven himself in some semi-serious roles time and time again.
Yeah, like I was saying, like, he's pretty restrained in the role. Like, when you see him stand-up, he's always in, like, the yelling kind of mode, or, like, getting upset about things and kind of in a funny way.
Right.
Whereas here, like, he's basically the straight man, because he's like, what the hell is happening in my house?
Right, yeah.
And with all these screwball situations and screwball people. And he definitely, like, throws out all those one-liners, and a lot of them really hit. Like, I think that really keeps it together. Him and the Marion character, of course.
Yeah.
Because if it was just a bunch of nonsense people, it'd be rough.
Yeah, exactly. No, it wouldn't fit at all. Like, his character is exactly how it should be, and he does a great job playing it, too. It's very straight-laced, very restrained, like you said. I think it's perfect. So, I think that about wraps it up. It's on Netflix for watching, and Kyle, do you endorse? Do you recommend people give it a watch?
Yeah, for Netflix, definitely. I'd be a little harder-pressed if it was, like, in the theaters, but it's not, so... Yeah, if you have Netflix, I would check it out. Like, I think it's a good... I saw that with my wife, and I recommend it as, like, a date movie. Like, it's not...
Did Brooke enjoy it?
Yeah, she liked it all right. She had the same thing where, the beginning, she's like, what the hell's going on with this movie? And it was just a little too cute, but it really warmed its way into your heart. I don't know. Something about it.
Yeah, I agree. Like, give it past the first 20 minutes, because it can be a little too indie film for its own good. So, give it a shot. But, all right, so that is 2 Days in New York, both heartily recommended on Netflix streaming for everybody out there. So, give it a whirl. Next up, we're going to be discussing the slept-on Cartoon Network animated show, China, Illinois.
Well, there's something I've been meaning to tell you about the college on the edge of the town. No one should ever go there. Bad, bad, bad. It gets worse every school year, but man, the freaking teachers are rad. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
China, Illinois is an animated television program on Cartoon Network, not Comedy Central, Cartoon Network. And it was originally intended to replace a web series that Adult Swim had called Super Deluxe, and had some characters on that was created by Brad Neely, who's the creator and one of the writers and voice actors for China, Illinois. So it's an animated show. It began life as a web series and then got adopted as a short, just a 10-minute shorts for Adult Swim on Cartoon Network. And then now is in its third season, and it is a full, you know, half-hour animated show.
Okay.
The program... The program is basically takes place in the city of China, Illinois, at a college there, and a lot of the characters, they have all these basically quirky characters that follow some teachers and some students and then their respective families and all the crazy things going on there. Most notably, you have Brad Neeling doing the voice of brothers Frank and Steve Smith, who are both teachers, both teach history at the college, and they get into a lot of rivalry, sibling rivalry and professional rivalry stuff all the time. And then you also have Pony, who is one of the assistant teachers, voiced by Greta Gerwig. And then you have Baby Cakes, who is by Brad Neely. And then, most notably, you have Hulk Hogan as the voice of the dean. Oh. And there's a lot of other really talented guest stars that come on here, too. Jeffrey Tambor plays the dad of Baby Cakes. Chelsea Peretti is a character named Crystal. Hannibal Buress plays a student. Dave Coulier showed up as Ronald Reagan a couple of times. So there's a lot of really weird, quirky additions. And for me, so I guess for me with this show, Adult Swim is really, I don't really watch a regularly Adult Swim. Not that I don't like the shows that come out of it, but I'm not like, I would never got into like Aqua Teen Hunger Force and things like that. So for me, this wasn't like big on my radar, but somebody recommended this to me a few years back and I got into it, and I like the pacing of this one a lot more. I've heard this show is described, and it really makes sense too. It's kind of like South Park, but without as much, but a different type of like antics, I suppose. Yeah. And I can think that's kind of true, especially because Brad Neely was an animation associate on the 11th season of South Park. So he's, you know, he worked with Matt and Trey on their stuff. And I think the show is, it's fantastical. It has a lot of crazy things that happen, but I think it does a really good job of bordering on being like just purely silly, funny, sometimes even like vulgar. It gets pretty vulgar at times, but even like having some really, really solid laughs with just the characters interacting and having their fights with one another and being jealous. And I think it's got clever writing. I think it's like one of those underrated shows because it looks pretty simplistic, but I think overall the writing's really solid, the acting's solid, and I think it's a really, really funny show that I don't know if a lot of people are watching. So that's my where I come from. Kyle, why don't you tell me what you took from watching this?
Yeah, I kind of come from the same angle because I watched like Space Ghost and like real old like the beginnings of Adult Swim really, but I never really got into the modern stuff that's really surreal and crazy. And we reviewed a few things that are kind of along those lines, whether it's on Adult Swim or not. But I really like this just because it has, I'm about halfway through the first season, even though they're on the third season now.
Oh, okay, cool.
Most of it's on YouTube. Somebody uploaded them. And they're really, like, it's really surreal and crazy. I like how there's like, just like odd things going on in the background, like a guy with a full beard, like, in the one episode I'm thinking of, and a baby's like nursing on him. Like, there's always just bizarre stuff, like both in plot line, but also just like just background side gags. And I really like that. But they still keep it. They still keep like kind of like with South Park or, you know, The Simpsons or, you know, Family Guy, even like they still like have like a sitcom story that they kind of adhere to. It might go in like crazy directions from the very beginning of it. Like it might be just like some rivalry between two characters in the town, but then it becomes like this time travel crazy story by the end of it. But yeah, it's really funny. I don't know. And I didn't know about the Hulk Hogan character or Dave Coulier. Cause I did watch the, there's one episode, I guess there's more you're saying, but the Ronald Reagan shows up. And that's actually the first one. The time traveling Ronald Reagan shows up, and there's just like weird stuff.
They do some really cool stunt casting where it's not obvious, but it's just funny. Like even Hulk Hogan's daughter Brooke Hogan, she shows up as a character a couple of times, and so it's just I think they do creative casting, but I think the writing is really good too. I'm going to remember most of the recent season because I'm caught up with it. But for instance, I agree. They toe the line between like these really, really fantastical, absurd, surreal ideas, but then putting it in a pretty real world. Like, for instance, one of the most recent ones that made me laughing a lot was there were all these crows at the school, and they basically realized that the crows were attending classes and the crows were being really smart. But then the crows were the reason why they were attending classes is because it was going to be an uprising so they could take over the school and they could run everything.
That does sound like a very South Park thing, like with the dolphins or
I mean it has that tinge of South Park on it, but without going nearly as I guess like as fast paced, right, maybe. Right. Like, this show's a little bit slower, and I think that they allow the character, like, they don't have as many mm-hmm. characters, so they just have, like, this really small cast that they just keep throwing situations at. And I like the dynamic between the two brothers. You have, like, the really laid-back, cool Professor Steve, and then you have his, like, really... Frank is the cool one, and then Steve is the really, like, high-pitched one, and he's, like, always, like, trying to, you know, get the best of his brother and stuff. And they do a fun job with having everybody work together. I think the writing's really solid. Yeah. I just love it.
Yeah, well, and they managed to, like, comment on things in a very weird China Illinois kind of way. I'm thinking of like the third episode of season one where there's like a weird science experiment that goes really, really wrong, and so they have this giant baby on campus, and everyone kind of has their own, like, there's a whole debate about, like, should we kill it, like, it's gonna, once it gets starts crawling, it's gonna, like, just demolish the city. And they kind of have some, like, they don't go too far into, like, you know, having like some kind of funny commentary on abortion, but there are moments there where it's, like, really clever, and it, you know, it can get absurd, just like real life can be absurd when people are talking about stuff like that.
They do.
I'm liking it. So
yeah, I
far.
Agree. They still, even in, like, because they do some just outright silly things from time to time, but even in that, they still find they find something to say. Like, it's like some kind of commentary on a situation, or just really satirizing.
Yeah, there's finding humanity in it.
Yeah, like, there was a recent episode where, if I'm getting this correct, it's Frank is basically trying to prove his masculinity, and he challenges he does it by challenging a boxer to a fight, but he challenges, like, an old retired boxer. Like, it's like, it's not George Foreman, but something like that. Like, it's somebody who would, like, never fight, but then the boxing legend decides, like, okay, like, yeah, I'll take you. And then he's like, oh, like, I really have to fight this guy. Like if he, and he's, like, screwed, because if he, like, beats up an old guy, then he's a horrible person. But if he gets beat up by an old guy, then he's bad. So they just do, like, they have these really fantastical ideas that I haven't really seen in other shows, but then they do a really funny thing with it. And so, yeah, it's, I don't know. I like it a lot.
One question I had was, so when did they go to that normal format, like, not 10-minute format?
In the second season, basically. After the first 10 episodes, they switched.
How did that go?
Because I
do like it in 10-minute bursts, but, like, does it work?
Yeah, I was apprehensive at first too, because I thought, like, the 10-minute, like, that was a really, really good length for this. But no, I think actually 20 minutes, they do a lot with that time still. I think the writing is just as solid, and they have, like, it's just like a traditionally animated show now, where they just have those normal, you know, A storylines, B storylines. There's multiple things going on, and it all ties together well. I think they know what they're doing, and I think they do a really good job. So you're not going to lose any quality in that.
Yeah, because even in these first 6 or 7 episodes that I've watched, they always have, like, a pretty strong, like, main story, and then they can kind of riff on that and go nuts by the end of it. And I think, like, that might even help with that they're in a longer format now, because they can kind of flesh out the main story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Add, like, even more characters.
Yeah.
I'll just say that when I first started watching this, like, I really didn't like the art style. Yeah, it's kind of, I still don't really like it, just because it's so bad looking, like, in a, you know, a classical cartoon kind of way.
Yeah, it's kind of got that web flash cheap animation look to it, like Homestar Runner even. It's not, like, not even as polished as that, but it's, like, pretty, it's got a style for sure, but it's, like, almost, it's not,
but it, there's, it's not, like, it's not like a cool kind of cheap, like the early South Parks, right, where everything was flat and but still very colorful. Like, everything seems very just kind of muted, like, black colors.
Right.
I don't know. I think what keeps me going is because, like, all the characters are very engaging, and just, like, I want to see more of this ridiculous world and what they do.
Right, exactly. So, no, I mean, and the show is successful on Adult Swim. I mean, they kept bringing it back, and it's got, like, it gets over 1.2 million viewers now, so it's certainly bringing in some people. But I just don't think, I think a lot of Adult Swim shows, they suffer from that label of being in an Adult Swim show, where I think the people that watch that, you know, block of comedy, they really love all of those shows. But if you're not in that block, then you're not really going to give this stuff the time of day. There's very few things that break out of being just in there. And I think this is a step. I mean, I'm not all the way caught up, but we reviewed, like, Mr. Pickles, and I enjoyed that to a degree. It was really absurd and super, super, extreme in its display, but it wasn't, I can't see that like breaking out outside of that. But this is a show that I could see, you know, it could be on Comedy Central as a compliment to South Park really easily. Like, I think it, you know, it's a well-written show is deserved of being just outside of the Adult Swim thing. I'm glad they're supporting it though. I don't want it to go away. I think it's fine where it is. I just think most people won't really give it the time of day or maybe don't even know about it because of that.
Yeah. I mean, this kind of makes me, like, I definitely want to watch the rest of this and get caught up, but it makes me want to check out some of the more Adult Swim stuff, because maybe it was at a certain time where it just, like, didn't click with me, because I've seen some of the things, like Robot Chicken, I've liked some of
their stuff. I like Robot Chicken, yeah.
And then, and then some of the Venture Brothers stuff I've seen, but I haven't dived into a lot of other things.
Yeah, like I missed the boat on those things, too. Metalocalypse
and Squidbillies and all that.
Yeah, all the stuff you just named I missed as well, and I missed Home Movies. Like, a lot of these things that I've heard great things about, but I just haven't had the time to watch, and I'd love to watch them. So, no, I hear you on that. But,
yeah.
All right, so...
Yeah, good, fine.
Yeah.
How did you hear about this? Just heard it from a... person that I know you heard about
it was our my friend Turan who he recommended it. It was so weird. I don't even know how he heard about it, but he recommended, because this doesn't really seem in his wheelhouse either, but maybe it is, and he recommended to me, and it was like just starting at the time, so I gave it a watch. And I agree with you, the first episode or two I wasn't exactly sold on it. I thought that it was a little primitive and kind of just silly, but I think they found their footing really quickly, and I ended up, like, the art style, I agree, the animation style is not the reason why you watch this show, because it's pretty bland when just looking at stills, but you get used to it, though.
Yeah, and they go beyond the normal things, the normal themes or style that most Adult Swim shows are known for, kind of like, just like being shocking and
exactly.
In your face. Like, there's still some of that, but I feel like there's, like, a good amount of just good comedy and comedic timing and colorful characters.
Yeah, and even when I say that it's vulgar, it's not nearly as vulgar as a lot of the other stuff I've seen on Adult Swim. Like, it's just more that it isn't afraid
it's not
to
go... gross yeah,
it's
so
not,
far.
Not gross at all. Like, it's actually... it's pretty safe.
It because even if there's like, a moment where... like, for example, there's a moment where there's this one character that gets, like, some kind of weird... I don't know, some science experiment happens to him, and he's got, like, a bunch of testicles, and it never gets into, like, some crazy thing where you see, like, a close-up view of it. It's just implied, kind of like, you know, anything in South Park or shows like that.
Yeah, South Park has gone to that, and they showed it, so, yeah, exactly. It has, it's sometimes vulgar, maybe, in, like, content or, like, what it's talking about, but I wouldn't say it's ever vulgar in the animation or, like, offensive. Like, it's really, it's always, like, making fun of it really well, so.
In the visual sense, yeah.
Yeah, China, Illinois, highly recommended by both of us now, because I'm glad I got you on board, Kyle.
Yeah, you did. Damn you. You got more things to watch, but it's a good time.
Yeah.
Because it's summer.
It's pretty short to watch, so it's not that hard. All right. So that is China, Illinois, which I believe airs on Sunday nights on Adult Swim. I'm not positive, though. I'll have to look into that. But that is China, Illinois. Lastly, we're going to discuss...
Any night on YouTube.
Yeah, you can go or watch it on YouTube. It's all there, yeah. Thank you, that person. Thank you, the couple of people that put that up. Lastly, we're going to be discussing the latest album from good old Brit Rockers Muse with their latest album, Drone.
You think you're strong and you can be broken, but your empire is dissolving. You thought I was weak, but you got it wrong. Look into my eyes, I'm at the
our musical segment this week, we're going to talk about Muse's seventh studio album, Drones, which comes out on Warner Brothers Records and Helium 3 this week. And like many of Muse's albums, the English rockers, electronic rockers in the most recent years, it's another concept album. This one's kind of following this protagonist as he's trying to be like, he's going to be, like, indoctrinated as a human drone, and then he eventually, like, defects from the army. So it's got a lot of, like, very on-the-nose political statements to make. But the main thing that people are excited about that are Muse fans, and I used to be a big Muse fan back in the day, The last two albums, people got really fed up with them because they've kind of gone in this weird pop, electro, orchestral kind of motif. But this one, the lead singer, Matthew Bellamy, he was promising a return to the old albums, their style, like more guitar, bass, drums kind of rock. Back in the day when they were constantly being referenced as a Radiohead ripoff, basically. And it's not quite a full return to those old days, but I think in the middle of this record, there's a lot of that old Muse spirit that kind of attracted me in the first place. But the beginning and end are it's a lot of that stuff you get from The Resistance, which came out in 2009, and The Second Law, which people, that was kind of like the nadir of this band in 2012. Just some weird, like, I don't know, like, pop ballads and just trying to be arty, but comes off as just, like, pretentious.
Yeah.
Just odd things, especially the end. We've talked over text message about the final song on this. I think it's the title track, right?
Yeah.
Drones. It's kind of like a Gregorian chant. I don't know what the hell to think about that song.
It's really weird because Muse is one of those bands that I really respect their musicality. They're incredibly talented musicians. They guitar, the vocals over the top at times, but I mean really impressive still. And production-wise, they really inhabit the sound that they're doing. And they made some really, really great tracks in their history. I've never been a super huge Muse fan, but I've certainly admired them. They're a good live band. You know, they do the anthem stadium rock really well. But this one... Yeah. I mean, I could see how this does go back to that Black Holes and Revelations sound they had before the Resistance, which they, I mean, it makes sense why they kind of had been doing the Resistance sound for a while, because they really got into the stratosphere with that one song from their Uprising, from that. And so, like, I get it.
Yeah.
But
I kind of see it as, like, this is, it's kind of like this would be a follow-up to Black Holes and Revelations that wouldn't quite be as like a drop-off like the last two records.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, they still have that electro stuff that they're working with, and it works here and there.
Yeah.
But I did like a lot of the guitar, like, soloing in the middle of the record.
Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, they do a really good job of coming up with some pretty catchy riffs and some really solid just...
Yeah, like Defector was really good. And
yeah, and Psycho, that has a really great just under... It has this really good... I don't know if it's the bass or the guitar, but it's this really good complement to the main riff, and it's done over the verses. It sounds really cool. And yeah, Defector was good too. Dead Inside is really good. Like, they do... When Muse is good, they're just that. They're good. It's not great. It sounds really solid, but it gets very samey very quickly. There's not a lot they can do with this sound they keep doing over and over again. And also, they need to lose the whole concept album thing entirely. Like, it's really stupid. I mean,
this whole thing of... Because they've been doing, like, kind of, like, versions of this same concept for the last two. Like, honestly, a lot of their concepts are pretty similar.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I never really associated that with, like... I mean, I guess Absolution had some sort of a concept, but the music was a lot better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't really care about the concept on any of their albums. They have been doing that for a while. It's always about, you know, battling the people trying to control you. That's it at the end of the day. And there's a lot of that on here, right down to the really horrible album cover for this. And... I can look past that and just take some of these songs that they are, and I can enjoy that. Like the aforementioned Psycho, I think that's a really, really great song on here. But then they intersperse this album with a lot of this dumb, like, this drill sergeant yelling at this guy and brainwashing him.
Yeah.
It's just like, it kind of feels like Pink Floyd the Wall-E, but really, really stupid.
Right.
And then also,
those things in between with the drill sergeant are really, really bad.
Yeah, they are. I mean, you can just skip past them, and it's not a big deal. Although I think there is one song at the end here. Maybe it's like Aftermath or something, where it kind of like actually is part of the song a little bit too. I don't remember which track exactly, but
well, Drones has some of that.
Yeah,
where he's like, your butt belongs to me since my daughter's in the same room as me.
Right, yes, that's fine. And then, and actually, I want to get to that point. So like, but then you have for instance, the song on here, Mercy. That song. Technically sounds great, like great guitars, his voice is good, but I swear, like, Matt Bellamy does this, he does the same parlor trick over and over again, which is impressive. Like, they've done it to really good effect on previous albums, or even songs, like recent ones, like Uprising and things like that. But, or even like, you know, Starlight. But he does that thing where he just like, he starts in a really lower register, and then just like, does this giant swell, and then it comes back down and goes up and down again.
I wrote that down too. Like it's not as warranted as it was back in the day, where the rest of the band would like explode.
And, right.
Like I listened back to some of the band's older stuff, and it made sense that people talked about Radiohead because he kind of like mumbled. It wasn't as, but what was good about it was like leading up to the big chorus, like he was kind of muffled, and the band was, but then they would explode.
Yeah.
And then, you know, have that big release. Whereas here, like, he just starts in, like, release mode, like, yeah, almost from the very beginning. And it's just too much.
Yeah, yeah. He like, there's a couple of later tracks on here. I forget which one it was exactly. It might have been Revolt, but like there's a later track on her where things actually do slow down, and I'm like, good, like this is great, like change the pace a little bit, let's slow things down a little bit. Yeah. You don't have to be in this full maximum gusto style all the time. Yeah. Like they can
the bad thing about that is he's always had bad lyrics
yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah,
and so that when the song's slower, like that's really
the lyrics are all about the delivery, not so much the content. Because yeah, even if you go back to their old stuff, that's good. The lyrics aren't that amazing, but it's more about like how they get it out there that really sells it. But going back to Mercy, like when I was listening to that song, I made a note, like just being like, I feel like this band, I agree, they used to get all these comparisons to Radiohead and Coldplay. They got lumped with all that band, that Britpop stuff. But now they sound way more like they're trying to be like Queen. Like it's this kind of space, a rock opera, very just like stadium anthem. Like not as much like the choir boy, like soft voice, but more just belting it out as much as you can. And
I really liked that about his voice in the past, but it has gone like a little too overboard because the songs are really long. Like, what is it? Is it the Globalist that's 10?
Yeah,
the Globalist
that's the
is 10 minutes towards
one.
The end.
Yeah, that's really
and
dumb.
It just goes through this like really weird production for a long, long time. Like all these different progressions, and it's just not really warranted.
Yeah.
And then, I don't know.
Well, I think
it just and then it ends with that ballad moment where it's very slow and has a
yeah. And I think that's
associated.
Overall the problem with this is that I think they're trying, and they did this on the previous album too. I don't really remember from The Resistance, but they're trying just to be way, way too serious to tackle like serious subject matter or like real world issues.
Yeah.
And it's like just go back to doing like the really surreal, spacey, you know, love, very, like, not simple in concept, but just, like, you don't have to be a politically charged band, because I don't really think they have it in them. I don't think it fits. They can do the just, you know, really nice exploration of feeling songs, and I think that's a way more, they do that really, really well. I think the serious subject matter, if anything, it holds them back, because now they're trying to send a message and make something, and it's just like, no one cares. Like, it doesn't matter.
Well,
like, just.
And they did that a lot better on, even Black Holes and Revelations, like, a lot of people, they're kind of like, oh, that's a step down from Absolution. But going back, like, there's a, like, rod of, like, really good explosive moments in that, both on the electronic and just pure rock type of mentality. Like, really sets them up to be, like, the stadium rock band that they are now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in recent stuff, like they're getting back towards that. Like, they don't have they don't not throw in like a bunch of weird power ballads into this one like the last two. but it's very telling that my favorite moments on this in the middle of the record, where it's basically where there isn't really any singing. It's just like the band is kind of pushing things around.
Yeah, that's true.
Which sucks because Matthew Bellamy's like, he's one of the great, I think it's maybe not like the top 10 or anything, but like he's one of the like really great. He's a great singer.
Yeah. No, so. He's got the band sounds great. They have he's a great singer. They're really talented. Like the guitars and all the drum fills, everything on here sounds super impressive. It's just the songs kind of lack. They're still a really good band. And at the end of the day, this album just kind of falls into the average territory where I think there's a couple of good songs on here that hold it up. I think there's a couple of songs that are really forgettable. And I think overall, you're not going to have. I don't think this warrants like a ton of listening or studying, but I think it's a step in the right direction for them. I think it's a step up from where they've been before. And I have hope from Muse that they can get back to another like really, really good album again. Cause I'm rooting for them at the end of the day, mm-hmm. but they need to pull it back a little bit more, like not as, you know, trying to push everything out so much. Any other,
well,
thoughts?
I mean, yeah. I didn't. I liked the part of like them going to the max because
they do it well.
What I liked about this record, but it just need to cut out a lot of like ditching the concept would help because you don't have all these like connective tissues like whether it's as short as something like Drill Sergeant, which is only 21 seconds, or as big as like Drones, which you know you don't need to throw that in there.
Right.
Like I wouldn't mind like maybe just do like an album that's almost like an EP length.
Oh, yeah.
And then keep some of these random ones for like an EP.
Right.
Because people, they have a devoted fan base. They're going to buy it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, so. They will. Yeah. I mean, I don't, I'm rooting for Muse. They can figure something out. But I mean, this album's fine. I you're right. Like they do a good job when they do really go to full throttle on these songs. So I don't want to diminish that. I think they do that well. It's just too much. I think they can find a better balance between it and just change up their style a little bit more with that. So yeah, overall, like Drones, it's a fine album. I think if you're a Muse fan, you're certainly going to be happier because it is a back to before a little bit more, but still like not gonna win you over if you've never listened to Muse before. It's not essential listening, but it's fun though. I certainly enjoyed this a lot more than some other releases I've heard recently, so yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, it was fun. It was fun listening to it through once. I don't know if I'm gonna really return it definitely reminded me that Muse is still a band and I want to check out some of their older things.
Yeah,
at the very least.
I feel like going back and listening. I've never listened to all their albums,
Return
actually.
To them.
So maybe I'll go back and do that. But for the sake of that,
those first few are really, really strong.
Yeah. For the sake of this, though, we'll call it a day. That is Muse's Drones. Yeah. And that is it for episode number 155 of Test Patterns. Thank you for listening, as always. Thank you, Kyle, for listening and for talking, both those things.
You're welcome.
And I'm going to cut it short this week. No advertisements, people. Let's just get to that game. So have a good one. Safe travels. And we'll see you again next week. Same time, same place, same internet. Kyle.
Game two. Gotta go.
Yes, you'll bust the rhyme.
Fred Krueger the myth, for Fred Krueger the man. It doesn't matter, cause I'm still rapping about him, understand? So sit back, Jack, I'm gonna bust the rhyme. Grab a hole in your face, it's Krueger time.
It's time for Freddy. See, I'm a popular guy. If you don't know yet, you're gonna find out why.
Yeah.